Unfortunately for Cam, it's been a while since his last appointment. But good news, the dentist will see you now. Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
I don't even know how to respond to that to open the show, to be honest with you.
That's the point. So Cam, are the teeth all in one place? All good?
Barely.
Good. No root canals this time. Good to know. Hey, gang.
No. As at least Miggy didn't fuck up my wisdom teeth removal like my actual dentist did.
Oh. We got to get Miggy on this. We'll call Miggy up for some private dental care. We'll fix you right up. Welcome to episode 402 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. And welcome to the second edition of the rebooted Bike Life. I know, it's fun and it's cozy in here because joining me, it's just a two-person booth. Yeah, we're sharing, it's cozy, we're sharing the same room again. It's me and Cam Buckley. Hello, Cam.
Hello, everyone. We speak to you from the Motorsport 101 shed.
We are back in the shed. As you do, we are making the most of a tight budget. We blew all of our budget on episode 400.
After much hardship, war, and budgetary constraints, episode 400, the Valentino Rossi retrospective.
Mm. Indeed. We thought, well, because it's bike season, we thought it would be a good time to re-release a classic that never actually saw the light of day. Fun fact, that was originally meant to be episode 334. Instead, it's 400. You know, what's 66 races between friends? Right. So, yeah, you know, we fixed it up and we put it out there, and I was very proud of it. So thanks to everybody who listened to it and enjoyed it. I know I certainly did putting it together. It's a true gem. I did really, really enjoy sitting through it, and some of the little, even going back through it a second and a third time for editing purposes, there's a lot of gems in that conversation that I forgot we actually had until listening it back. It's a really, really fun time. So do check it out if you haven't already. Thanks to everyone who's listened in. Much, much appreciated. And hope you stick around, because we have the Thailand Grand Prix to talk about for MotoGP. And this was a race that very nearly didn't happen. This was wild. We had a hell of a lot of rain in the Thai area. On the brink, I reckon, of it was, you know, we wouldn't have gotten a race at all. If we'd gone an hour later, we probably wouldn't have gotten a full race in, because we were only about an hour away from the end of the race, from it being sunset in Thailand. And Buriram doesn't have lights. So we MotoGP timed the window perfectly in that, because I remember watching on BT Sport, like 2 minutes after the race was over, it pissed it down. Like thunderstorm level wet. So we got very lucky on this one. But we did get a full race in. And, well, if there was any doubts beforehand as to who MotoGP's Rainmeister is, it is most certainly Miguel Oliveira, who took his second race win of the season on that blasted KTM. I don't know how he keeps doing this, but he finds a way. He really does.
Somewhere Ryanair King is helicoptering violently.
until he stops and realizes, wait, you're letting him go? For who? Oh, the man who finished in second, Jack Miller, who is actually putting together his best run as a MotoGP rider so far. It's a weird one. Also, remember the last time we had a wet race, Cam? Do you remember when Francesco Bagnaia finished 15th?
Yeah. Far removed from those days.
Third on the day. Crazy stuff.
He didn't win? He didn't have that getting away from the cop speed?
No, he was actually quite fuming on this one, but he had a solid third place and picked up some good championship points. Can't say further than that.
Pecco Bagnaia taking the points. Huh? No. What? No.
He's learning. Surely everybody, not. He's learning. Everybody look out. This might be a problem. We'll be talking all about that at the front of the field and the race itself. We'll be talking about yet another title implications flashpoint, because this was another topsy-turvy weekend. Fabio Quartararo crossed the finish line. He did not score points. No, that actually happened. We'll get into all of that as well. And unfortunately, we have yet more paddock shenanigans in the worst way possible. We'll get into that as well, because it is very effed up how we got to this point, and it needs further discussion. You've probably seen the video already if you're a MotoGP fan, and we'll talk more about that later on in the show. But we'll get into the Thailand Grand Prix right after we tell you where you can find us. We're on YouTube.com/Motorsport101. We're on Facebook.com/Motorsport101. We're on Twitter at Motorsport_101. If you follow our personal handles, you can at Harrison101HD and at CBuckley917. We're on Instagram if you want all our content updates there at Motorsport101Pod. And if you really, really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon. Patreon.com/Motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of these episodes live as they're being recorded. 10 gets you into the supporters club of our Discord server. You can listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, which Jason is doing right now. Hello, Jason. Good to see you. Hope you enjoy the show. But without further ado, let's get into it, and let's get into MotoGP's Grand Prix of Thailand. Cam, good news.
Yeah?
We have a new Rainmeister.
How the heck are they letting this guy go at the end of the year?
I don't understand how he got to this point, but we have a new Rainmeister, and it wasn't for the return into Nino Petrucci, who came back this weekend. Good to see you, Petrix. Hope the kids and the wife are all right. He had a cool cup of coffee and a 20th place finished, as you do. But it was for Miguel Oliveira, who... Well, he's now 2-for-2 on wet races this season. It was a pretty tight tactical race with Jack Miller. He and Miller were the two fastest guys in the wet conditions pretty much all the way through. Miller led the first half of the race. Miguel Oliveira got him into to start the second half of the race. And Miller dropped off, came back, gave it one last assault, couldn't find a way around Miggy. Miggy wins his second race of the year, his fifth race in MotoGP. We'll get into a little bit of some of the stats behind that in a minute. But yeah, it was a close run finish between the top five, all pretty much line astern going over the line. Jack Miller would finish second. Francesco Bagnaia third, which I think is the best he's ever done in a wet race, certainly.
By a mile and a stretch, I do believe.
Yeah, no kidding. Johann Zarco, who at one point was the fastest man on track, but... You know, either one, did his tires in at the end, two, decided I can't win this race, so I'm not going to attack Bagnaia, three, was told not to attack Bagnaia, or four, all of the above. So you be the judge at home on that one if you've watched that race, because Zarco was the fastest man on track, got past Marquez, got up to Bagnaia, and didn't attack him.
Held station.
You be the judge at home on that one is what I would say. And yeah, Mark Marquez was in that leading group as well, in fifth place.
Still here.
Still in the league. And hell, Mark, after the race, said on Twitter, it was the best weekend he's had in MotoGP for 3 years, he reckons. Just feels great about the bike, great about his body. I mean, we saw over the course of the weekend, he was picking the bike back up with his bad arm.
Yeah, he was... He looked like the Mark of old is basically the best way to put it. I mean, but without this devolving too much into another Mark love fest, because we do have to talk about the man who actually took the trophy
indeed
home with himself. But yeah, Mark looked great pretty much all weekend. It was a last corner near crash and save away from a probable front row start. Was still the second highest of the non-ducks in qualifying behind Fabio, who again doing the Lord's work to try and get that bike, you know, into the top five on pace and qualifying, because it's just a sea of red right now.
Indeed.
But instead of the sea of red, we got to talk about the splash of orange at the top.
Oh yeah,
how the hell? Miguel Oliveira is such a conundrum of a rider, because he will go three or four races being completely anonymous on a completely anonymous bike, you know, being generally outperformed by Brad Binder. And that's no insult, because Brad Binder is, you know, for pretty what good. He's doing on that bike, he is one of the best riders in the sport right now on form.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you'd get anyone who would disagree with that.
Nope, not me.
And then there's just these random races where Miguel Oliveira will show up and he will beat the field into the dirt. I don't get it.
His upside is as good as anyone's in MotoGPs, and I've been saying this since he was a Moto3 rider. And this was back in, I think, 2014, 2015, I was saying this about Miguel Oliveira.
Yep.
That there, like, when I was watching him when he was riding for Red Bull KTM's IO branch in Moto3, I was like, there is something about this kid. Like, the way he was able to dictate those really heavy-duty Moto3 pack races, where he was always at the front, always in the right place at the right time, and almost always won. I was like, there is something special about this kid. Like, there is something about him that I think he could win at the top flight. And I don't normally say that about Moto3 riders. And he's climbed the ranks to the point where he's now won 5 MotoGP races. He's one of only 2 men in the field that have won 5 races in all 3 classes. The other one being Marc Marquez.
And I looked decent company.
I looked at the field. There was a bunch of 4s in there, but he's the only man to have won 5 races in all 3 classes. It's incredibly strange, but it works for him.
If he could do this more often, I mean, what would we think about his demotion? Well, we'll see if it's a demotion, given that he's going to an Aprilia next year, because that, other than Aprilia's operational issues, the bike is very sound in that camp right now. And the guy they're replacing him for is pretty much of the same story with Jack Miller. Because as much as we were praising Miller in Japan for, you know, rightfully so, for just flattening everyone, pretty much from practice onwards, in this race, the classic Miller bug showed up. He plenty of speed, but just cooked his front tire.
Yeah. And when a wet race happens in MotoGP, it mitigates the one weakness that KTM has, which is that mid-corner speed. They struggle with that in dry conditions. They lose a lot of speed through the middle of the corner, and that's where they lose a lot of their lap time. That's not a problem in the wet. It mitigates that weakness that KTM has as a motorcycle. And then when you get the right setup and the right guy who has the confidence in the wet, we all know the wet is a great equalizer in this sport. Miguel Oliveira just finds a way. He's so smooth and he's so fast. And, you know, he had to, yet again, this was not a walkover by any stretch. Like, Jack Miller is very good in wet conditions. He always has been. He's fearless, that boy.
I'd argue those are his best conditions, are in the pouring rain.
Yeah, he's an outstanding wet-weather rider. He's one of the best in the world at it. He won his first MotoGP race from 20th on the grid doing exactly that. Miller's one of the very best in low grip, low tarmac conditions. He's very, very good at that. And Miggy, he could not be passed once he got to the front. Now, don't get me wrong, a lot of that is still the same problem we've talked about with MotoGP, and, well, the fact that its tires are just, you know, not working with the way these bikes are, with the shapeshifters and the wings. You know,
we had kind of an at-length discussion before we started recording that these bikes have gained since 2019, when really this shapeshifter and, you know, really the aero war went completely nuclear. These bikes have gained around some of these tracks 2 to 3 seconds a lap on more or less the same construction and compound of tire. They actually brought back for this weekend that 2020 Austria tire that was wreaking all kinds of havoc depending on which bike you were riding. Really badly crippled Aprilia this weekend.
Yeah, like Aprilia was complaining massively about this. Aleix Espargaró was not happy about having to race on the 2020 carcass. And it really seemed to take away a lot of Aprilia's corner speed because there was no grip on the rears. And it adds up. It compares to what we talked about with Mandalika earlier this year when Aleix had to, let's not forget, jam his rear brake up to the point where it basically didn't work anymore.
Yeah. I mean, remember what that tire did in the Honda camp, because, I mean, Mark got launched into low Earth orbit, like, what, 3 times that weekend?
Something one like
that,
yeah.
One of which finally giving him a major concussion again, triggered the double vision again. So the tires are just far beyond their operating window. They're not meant to cope with the loads that this new generation of MotoGP chassis and aerodynamics puts on them.
Right. And yeah, we still have to deal with that because once again, once bikes, like, it was very hard to overtake. Bikes were struggling and you could see riders had to take enormous amounts of risk to be able to overtake. We saw Marquez try it on Bagnaia a couple of times and, you know, man ran really, really wide at the final corner as a direct result of it. There was just no, you can't do it. It's just, you get sucked into the vacuum of the rear of the bike behind you as well when you're braking. So even like hard slipstream and dive bombs don't really work all that well either. So it's a very tricky situation that there is no straightforward answer for until the sport wants to.
Well, there is a straightforward answer.
Well, there is.
They're not allowed to do it.
Yeah. Ducati will hold out until they absolutely have to. There, well, the only argument we had was that the Aragon crash we had earlier this season, this is what David Emmett put out there, saying, well, hey, they could maybe get them banned on safety grounds if they're causing bikes to have spectacular accidents like the one we saw at Aragon with Marquez and Nakagami when he had a piece of Quartararo's fairing in his shapeshifter device. Not ideal, to say the least. But
And then another one on that front, get well soon, Taka. More surgery on that hand. Thankfully, Oof. Sounds like it went pretty well, but the injuries to his hand from that crash were more severe than originally thought.
Yeah, geez. I think the words we used when we talked about Japan was pool of blood in the glove.
Taka couldn't get his glove on, such was the pain, but it was cleared fit for duty, because of course he was.
This sport is funny, and I don't mean that in a good way. If you know, if you saw it, Cam, but there was a grim thread by Matt Oxley on Twitter earlier this week when previous older riders were talking about, you know, nasty finger injuries that are now damaged permanently because of what they've had to go through. And obviously trying to ride with damaged tendons and what that can do. It's
to kind of talk about that actually from personal experience, that my dad has been down on a bike and one of his hands, the fingers don't quite close all the way because of that.
Oh shit. Yeah.
I mean, I've come off a motorcycle before. It's not fun.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's absolutely better for Taka to get that fixed now rather than later.
Yeah. You don't want to have permanent damage on your hands, and yeah, it's not ideal, but yeah, hopefully he'll be back for Phillip Island next weekend. We do have a week off in between this very busy flyaway season now. So hopefully it'll give the time for Taka to rest up and hit up Phillip Island, or as I like to call it, God's racetrack. But
well, given the person filling in for him, Nagashima's actually done a pretty decent job.
Mm, he has. Rule number one, don't crash. That always, you're a test.
Pretty much.
You're dead a test. And if you don't crash, you're doing fine. And yeah, given it was horrible conditions this weekend, good job, to say the least. Because like I said, if this race happened half an hour later, we wouldn't have a race.
No. I mean, there's some pictures from the actual race conditions where it's very poor visibility.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about it too much before we get into the title picture. The Moto2 race was called off after 9 laps.
I'm pour one out for this man.
Somkiat Chantra, who was leading that race, a home race from pole position. It would have been the stuff of dreams for, you know, to have a Thai race winner at home. Binned it just as the rain was getting so heavy and so hard to see because of the spray that was coming off these bikes that he ended up high-siding it into oblivion about 2 minutes before the red flag came out. It was horrible. Horrible luck. A real shame because Chantra had a perfect weekend up to that point. But for those who maybe don't follow the junior classes quite as much, Tony Arbolino did win that race, but unfortunately he only got half points for it because we didn't get to two-thirds race distance. The race was called after 9 laps. They tried a restart. They had the formation lap. They were like, nope, we can't see shit. It's too wet. Pulled everybody back in. This race will not be restarted. Tony Arbolino wins. He got the win, and unfortunately, only gets 12.5 points for it, which is a bit of a bummer. But it happens in motorsport sometimes. Shout out to Philip Salat, who decided to celebrate by rolling around in the mud, literally. I praise him for his temerity on that one. But yeah, only half a point came out of Iagura's title lead as a result of that. So it's a 1.5 point gap, which is really weird to say now in the fight for the Moto2 title, which is interesting to say the least. But Cam, let's talk about the title picture.
Yeah, this title picture. And I mean, does anyone actually want to win this? Because I feel like if these guys keep screwing around, none of the top three title protagonists are going to end up with it.
This is a strange one. Now, Fabio Quartararo was basically screaming at anyone prepared to listen, I don't want to race in these conditions. It's too dangerous. Apparently, Aleix Espargaró was telling him, who's obviously, you know, Fabio's best mate, go tell Loris then. Like, he thought it was okay, but apparently it was a genuine mixed bag about people that wanted to race and people who didn't want to race. It was apparently very split down the middle. But they went ahead. They raced it. They raced it anyway. Fabio Quartararo, I think, got spooked on the opening lap by Alex Marquez nearly hitting him on the opening lap. He dropped down to 17th place on the opening two laps and never really looked back, unfortunately, in a bad way, in that he was stuck there.
Never recovered.
Yeah, he was stuck there the whole way through. Couldn't get back up to the front of the field. And yeah, that was it. Fabio Quartararo crossed the line in 17th place. No points at all. His other title rival, we talked about Bagnaia finishing third, Aleix Espargaró, who was in the midfield for most of the race, got back up into the top 10, and then got hit with a long lap penalty for riding into the side of Brad Binder.
Not incorrectly, I might add, because no. That was some racing public lobby shit.
Yeah, that was out of line. He pretty much drove right into Binder's side pod. Binder was lucky not to have a mangled leg as a result of that impact. I have no complaints from the stewards here on this one. I think
this is the first time we have had there has been a stewarding decision in MotoGP, and everyone's just like, "Yep, sure."
Yep. Yep. not even Aleix complained about it. It was like, yeah, that's fair enough. I can't really argue with that one. And yeah, it was a fair penalty. He took his long lap. He would eventually finish in 11th. So hey, it's still 3 points. Well, 4 technically, if you want to be specific about this. Well, 5 actually, if my maths is right there. But unfortunately, he didn't take full advantage of the situation because, as mentioned, Preco Bagnaia was third. And that leaves the championship in a very strange position because Fabio's buffer is now gone. It is a 2-point gap at the top of the championship now between Quartararo and Bagnaia.
It was 91 points leaving Austria.
It was 91 points 7 races ago. And there was a race in there where Fabio actually gained ground because of what happened in Japan.
Yeah.
So
Pecco's complete botching of the Japanese Grand Prix basically amounts to a nothing burger.
Yeah, it got wiped out and then some. 7 rounds ago, it was a 91-point difference between those two. It's now 2. So Bagnaia has almost taken 14 points per round out of Quartararo in the last 7 races. It's punishing. It's been bombardment from Bagnaia ever since Germany. And that's with a DNF chucked in there. So that says it all about how much Bagnaia has reeled him in. But it's now really a 5-way fight because Aleix Espargaró is still here at minus 20 within a race. Still just hanging around here. And Ea Bastianini, the gap's come down in the last couple of rounds. He's now only 39 off the top. And now, with his first and second, Jack Miller is now only 40 points off the top.
Over the hills in the distance. It's the Jackass theme. Yeah, I mean, because of the complete collapse of Yamaha and the really Ducati got their tire wear somewhat under control after Austria, and it's Fabio has not looked like winning a race since then. Even when he has decent enough race pace, can't qualify the bike high enough up the grid in order to take advantage of it.
Because there's always,
you're not passing anyone on that bike, especially given the current state of the regs with the aero and the shapeshifter devices.
Yamaha was struggling to pass people even before that was happening, given the fundamental problems of their bike. Now it's even worse. It's been exacerbated by the current set of regulations. And yeah, it's not ideal for Fabs at all. I mean, I said Austria is about the only race he's even had a shot of winning since Germany, the last time he won a race. And that was long before the summer break. It feels like it was a decade ago.
It feels like watching the second half of the season, you wonder how Fabio's maintained the gap. And it's really, it was that 20 points that he gained in Austria, and it's just been chipped away ever since.
Yeah, and it's, to be fair, Jason even gives us a good counterpoint in the chat. Counterpoint, Oliveira started 11th and won. Well, yeah, I can't really argue with that, unfortunately. Yeah, it's, you look at this title picture now, and the thing is that there are, I said it during my written blog, which you could read on the website where I talked about this. I said, look, this now might be a game of who fucks up the least between
the other seasons.
Like, no one has taken it. Like, Bagnaia has got the most compelling case here, but we expected Bagnaia to be this good. He was the championship favorite with the bookies going into the season.
But Dre, here's the problem with three of these contenders here. They're on Ducatis.
Mm-hmm.
Death, taxes, Ducati tucks the front.
Tucks the front. Yeah, exactly.
They're all one crash away. And given the current spread of the season, Pecco is due at least one more crash.
Yeah. Pecco has four of these of his own volition this season over the course of the year. So even with Bagnaia at -2, I sit there and I go, can you guarantee he's not going to crash that bike one more time between now and the end of the year? Because that might be all it needs. It might be one case of one more DNF, and if Fabio finds a way to get on the podium, that might be enough.
Yeah, that it would be enough. And there's tracks where, I mean, either Bagnaia could crash or Fabio could end up out of the points, because Fabio just, he's just not that great in the rain. A consistent thing. If we get one more wet race, either of these guys could lay an egg. To say nothing of Aleix Espargaró, who just, what could have been these last two weekends? Because he's left so many points on the table.
So many.
I mean, that the scoring pylon screw up. The engine mapping left on the bike, and then just riding like an idiot on Sunday, frankly.
Yeah. And
that's the whole gap.
Yeah. That and the Silverstone ankle injury, which was a crash of his own volition.
Even scratching that, that's the whole gap here. He's 20 points back. That's easily mitigated by even a second place last week.
Yeah. It's, if Aleix is roughly this sort of background back by the time this year's all said and done, we could say that Aleix was never more than maybe 30 points off the championship lead. They're going to be sitting there ruining the fact that they could have had this between them and Aprilia combined, with the amount of, you know, unforced errors that they have had. It's like watching Serena Williams play tennis, like unforced errors. It's like
watching everywhere. Ferrari do Formula One.
Yeah, just, you look at them and you just go, you could have won this. Like, Fabio Quartararo is probably going to win the biggest MotoGP season ever. If he does win the title, it's going to be probably with under 300. In fact, it will be with under 300 points.
No, 300 points, because Fabio has not been at the level that he was the previous year in 2021. He's been up and down this year, but so has everyone around him. And Ducati just took too long to get their shit together regarding this year's not quite a GP22.
Yeah.
And then just Pecco leaving a bunch of points on the table. Aleix and Aprilia have left, to my estimation, at least a good 35, 40 points on the table.
Agreed.
And then Bastianini, who's basically a baby Bagnaia, in the sense that on his upside, on his best days, he can win
mm-hmm.
in dominant form. On his worst days, he's anonymous.
I think he's had half a dozen races this season, race finished between 8th and 11th. If the GP21 is not dialed in, Enea Bastianini will not crack the top six. That's just how it's been all year.
And your floor just can't be that low.
No. He's done it too many times this year. He's crashed a few times here and there, silly. Like, yeah, it's like everything about Bagnaia, but nerfed to a degree. He's not quite as big a winner, although he has four of his own, which is obviously great in its own right. He's got four wins, but he doesn't DNF it quite as much as Bagnaia does, but also the floor is a little bit higher, but not by enough to make a difference. It's 8th and 9th and 10th and 11th. It's that sort of ballpark when he's not performing well. And it's a similar case with Jack Miller, where Miller, the floor is a little bit higher, but he can't win as much. He has one win on the year.
If these last two weekends were what Miller was doing all the way through the year, he'd be a dominant champion. And we can say that about all five of these guys.
Yeah, they all have significant weaknesses. And it's going to be whoever mitigates them the most that is probably going to win this championship. And that is going to be a problem. Like, Miller's only really in this fight because he's had 45 points the last two races. Like, the second, obviously, this weekend, this past weekend in Thailand, and then the win in Japan, which goes to show you he can do it. He's got the ability to be able to do this. But again, might have left it far too late. And again, another guy that's made silly mistakes across the year, silly crashes that weren't necessary. Like Misano, he was leading that race when he crashed. You know,
how valuable would those points be now?
They would have been priceless. He'd have been within 15 points. Like that, it's Miller again. There's going to be three or four people that are going to be looking back on this season with deep tinged regret because of where Fabio is right now, where he's vulnerable as fuck right now in this title race. And everybody else has left so much on the table. Fabio still has an outside chance of getting away with it. The problem is now he's got very little margin for error between now and the end of the season, because Bagnaia is right there on two. But even then, Bagnaia might tip it again.
all it's going to take from either of the top two, if either of them crash, I can't see them getting back.
No.
I can't see them getting back into the title contention, because Bagnaia is either going to get on the podium or crash, and Fabio's either going to reel off podiums or top fives to the end of the year, or be anonymous outside the points. And we don't know how it's going to look until we go into the race itself.
Yeah.
And in all of this, Mark Marquez is just here vibing basically top five, four or five every week now.
Hmm. Oh God, where do we even start on this one? Like we are sitting here. We genuinely don't know who's going to win this championship. It's fascinating, but for the worst possible reasons. Because they've all just made such... Like, this is not going to be the highest quality of champion, no matter which way you look at it. And if Fabio bottles this one too, we're going to be looking at him saying, you know what, you're a world champion, but you could have had three by now.
Oh, easily.
And we're looking at Fabio like, dude, you could have had a Marquez-like career to start your career off when you got here at age 20, and you've left maybe two world titles on the table.
Well, and in all of this, referring to that man, they're all on borrowed time right now, because Mark, with like 1.3 arms now, is reeling off top fives for fun.
Yeah, and he's feeling good about it. He's only going to get better.
On an atrocious motorcycle.
Yeah, he's going to be spoiler here for at least one of these men, at least one.
If he continues on the trajectory that he's on right now, he could pull a win, maybe at Phillip Island, given it tends to be a bike equalizer. It's one of our favorite rounds on the calendar for that exact reason.
Mm-hmm.
If he's feeling up to it, you know, that's a couple of points that he's going to take off of all of these guys if he can.
Right. Marquez could play spoiler like 2015 all over again. It's going to be fascinating to watch. Please no kicks. Please. God help us all. Right. Now, that's pretty much all we've got to say about Thailand. Now, this is a content warning. We are probably going to discuss some things in the last segment of this show that you may find upsetting. If you want to stop listening now, that's completely fine. We'll see you in a couple of weeks' time for Phillip Island. You may find this upsetting, so look after yourself and be careful going forward. If you have and you tune out now, thank you very much for listening. We'll see you next week. Right, now, that's your warning. But unfortunately, one of the more unsavory stories that came out of Thailand this past weekend was a video that went live on a Twitter thread with some journos in it, which never goes down well. And it was a video from 2019. And in it was a video of former Moto3 rider Tom Bufemos being, for lack of a better term, assaulted by his crew chief after a bad session in the back of his garage. This is back when the CIP team was a thing. They're now the Max Racing team, you now know them as. Remember that name, it becomes important later. And yeah, it went viral. A lot of the journos in the sport brought it to Dorna's attention. Dorna have since investigated what has happened, and they've also found out that the crew chief is still working for the Max Racing team right now. And it was announced literally today as we're recording this that he will be sacked from his post, unfortunately, after Phillip Island, because of Dorna, I believe, have had some mitigation regarding, you know, the Max Racing team were already down on staff going into this weekend. And, you know, they want to give the team a chance to find a replacement, basically. Let's talk about this, because this is obviously something that went there was a feud story. And I think I start off by saying, completely off the top, this is completely unacceptable.
I don't think that's especially controversial. Yeah. I mean, it's there words had between the two, and the rider starts walking away and then just basically gets sucker punched.
Yeah.
An attack from behind by his mechanic.
Mm-hmm. Just, it's nasty. And like, it's doubly upsetting for many, many reasons for me. And I gave this a serious thought, you know, that, you know, about all of this. And I go, Tom Bufemos was 23 when this happened. And he's a young man, and he's been assaulted by a member of his own team. Tom released a statement about said incident as well. I think it's worth me reading this out, because it went viral and it got responded to very, very quickly. And it was, quote, "The video that's appeared is from the 2019 Thai Grand Prix. There was a lot of issues with the team that year that was never spoken about, and I just kept quiet just to try and keep my ride for the 2020 season, as it was my dream to stay in that paddock. This happened after the race when my bike broke down due to a mechanics error. I was asked to not say anything and to keep quiet. I never told anyone, including Dorna and my management at the time. That's just one thing that happened that year. People don't know what goes on behind the TV screen." Interestingly enough, the first person to reply was Jonathan Ray, who said, quote, "No one should ever have to sit on that kind of behavior. Makes me so mad watching this, especially as the team just turned the page." He's not wrong.
I mean, to reiterate to listeners, this incident happened in 2019 and was pretty much swept under the rug entirely until it resurfaced just this past week.
Somebody sat on this video for 3 years. That's what terrifies me about this. Somebody sat on this video footage of a rider being attacked by his crew chief, and nobody said a damn thing until it was put in a Twitter thread, picked up by journos as a joke.
I say that, and that as well. It was more or less treated with insignificance initially, treated as a joke.
Yeah.
And then the writers started talking about it. I mean, Aleix Espargaró especially talked at length about it, was mortified
Yeah, he was disgusted at what he seen. Elisha was absolutely livid. And we all know it takes a lot to piss off Elisha. And yeah, like the riders apparently were all talking about this and talking about how disgraceful it was. They wanted the sport to act. They have, at least for now. And yeah, I mean, first and foremost, I'm glad that Dorna at least, you know, of forced Max Racing Team's hand to sack the person. Unfortunately, I don't like the fact that it's not going to be until after another round, because now the sport knows there is a known abuser amongst its paddock. Then we're going to act like nothing's happening next week when we go to Phillip Island. And they're not, and Dorna has, pardon me, has given the team a chance to replace said member of staff, because let's not forget, Max Racing Team also sacked the two mechanics who blocked Adrian Fernandez's bike in Moto 3 in Aragon, the other viral incident we've had for MotoGP in the last month.
It's both on the same team. What a what a thrilling combination of people they've got there.
Yeah, three members of staff are going to lose their jobs in the space of a month over horrific conduct on track. It makes me sit here and it makes me fearful of what else gets swept under the rug. Because if somebody sat on the video of a rider being assaulted by his own crew chief, and that was kept under wraps for 3 years, what else don't we know about?
Yeah.
And I mentioned it in my Motorsport 101 piece as well, and a salute to Tali, who is a good friend of mine, who you know, reached out to me beforehand saying, Dre, you might want to put this out there. And I was like, no, let me use my platform because I want people to know about this. There was a mechanic who was in her Twitter DMs, I think it was her Instagram DMs, technically speaking, who talked about the possibility of her bringing her friend along for the Australian Grand Prix, getting her drunk and then having sex with her. That person's still a mechanic in the Moto 2 paddock right now. I have verifiable proof about this that I obviously can't say on the podcast, but take my word for it on this one. They're in the Moto 2 paddock right now. Again, it's disgusting and completely unacceptable. And that person still has a job. That person is in the paddock right now. Like, we need to be taking a look at the entire culture of bike racing here, because it irks me that a bunch of people would have probably seen what's happened in the last week and probably just not take it all that seriously. I've seen Matt Oxley talk about it for, you know, years, and how he said about some of the things he's seen in the back of a paddock that he didn't see. He expressed regret about not speaking out about it more at the time, using the platform that he had. I know Simon Patterson talked about what happened at the British Grand Prix, where people in that paddock were being vile and shouting out racist abuse about one of their Moto 3 riders, and I think it was Josh Wheatley, who, again, this wasn't picked up on. And it's incredibly frustrating because these stories about the sport keep coming up. We've been talking about this now for the last 2 months, Cam, and it just keeps on coming.
So eventually people aren't able to hold the flood back any longer. And to your point that if we're finding out about these things now, A, how many do we not know about, and how long have they been going on for?
And people probably just, years.
Oh, of course. Decades.
Mm.
You know, there's sections of every culture that have that. Only it's like Dorna is just hands off about it. They don't want to hear about it. They don't want to see anything about it.
Mm. It's annoying, and like, I still remember I saw Matt tweet Simon Patterson about it, having a conversation about it, where he said, and I quote, "Now, what do we do about all the dads who beat their children in the back trying to get into the MotoGP paddock?" I don't think he was joking.
No, because, I mean, for the two of us have been following Matt's work for years now. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't joke about something like that.
Not in a million years. And he's had to be very brave recently, talking about a lot of social issues and Ducati's terrible PR in the last couple of months.
He's been blacklisted by the Ducati factory.
He's been blackballed by Ducati for press availability now, because of what he said about Francesco Bagnaia having a Dennis Rodman tribute helmet, and the fact he spoke about the tire pressure situation. He was the first person to break the story in Jerez about how Bagnaia won on an illegal bike, essentially having illegally low tire pressures. And then when the story broke, his main source of the tire pressure sheet backed out of it, and then Ducati basically blackballed him.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we're dealing with now, folks. This is our sport. It's chilling, and I don't mean that in no good way. It's awful that these stories keep coming up. And, like, what's it going to take for us to have to write for the? I get it. MotoGP is niche compared to Formula One. It has a tenth of the audience that Formula One has, and has a tenth of the buzz right now compared to Formula One, which is going for a bit of a mini boom period right now. Like, we've had a lot more social media and social issue based conversations about Formula One and how it's handling itself in the last couple of years. Why has that not happened in MotoGP?
We have enough issues trying to get F1 to act. I mean, but at least it feels like there is some movement there.
Yeah, it feels like they're at least trying. Or at least, you know,
making some kind of effort. I mean, with the MotoGP side of things, it just feels we're pulling on the rope and there's no resistance here.
Yeah, it feels like we're screaming at the wall, and it may take a major scandal before we start having those conversations. And it's sad. We've had accusations of racism. We've had violence in the paddock. We've had media being blackballed.
Running the sport explode in a press conference about the mere mention of a rider union.
Yeah, and all of that going on in the last 2 months, with the controversy of sprint races, the announcement that they're going to race in Saudi Arabia, and now Kazakhstan as well. What are we doing here? Like, does anyone in this sport give a shit about how they look to the outside world?
Not when they can make money off of it.
It's incredibly frustrating, because you are listening to two of the biggest bike fans we know, and we love bike racing, we love bikes in general, and we love talking about it. Like, trust me when I say, we don't want to talk about this any more than anybody else does. I'd love to sit here and tell you about how great MotoGP is. Like, we've just had a 2-hour, 20-minute long special about its greatest rider, and we loved making it. But we also don't want to use this platform and turn a blind eye to some of the horrible bullshit and defending of awful men that are in this paddock. It's incredibly frustrating. And I wish the sport woke up a little bit more and did better. The fact that this guy is going to get a delayed sacking, he's going to roll around Phillip Island as if nothing's happened for a week before he goes.
Let me ask you something. If one of us, given the positions we're in our respective, you know, careers, one of us assaulted a coworker, how long do we keep our job?
You're going home for the day looking for a new fucking job.
Exactly. This happened quite literally in broad daylight, mm-hmm. on camera.
Yep.
And it was kept under wraps for 3 years.
Yep.
And it did come out, and we know effectively who did it, who was assaulted.
Mm-hmm.
Delayed sacking.
Yeah.
I don't get it, man.
He gets one more check before he has to leave the paddock. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing, and the sport needs to do better before something really horrible happens, and it's going to be a lot like what happened with Vince McMahon and the WWE, where the Wall Street Journal took a look at what was going on, and then within two articles, Vince had stepped down via the medium of Twitter. That's how quick it turned around. And the sport is one major scandal away from that happening. And as a bike writer, as a bike fan who knows we're in a situation where we are not F1 and we're nowhere near to F1, and MotoGP often wishes it was F1 with the amount of attention that it got, more people need to be beating the door down about what is going on with this sport, because morally speaking, it's in the gutter right now, and it needs to do better, massively better. I don't even want to do a standard outro on this one, because it pisses me off that much. But, like, please, MotoGP, you've got a unique opportunity to set a standard of the most basic codes of behavior in your paddock. And it's taken severe pressure from the media to even get to this point. More has to be done. More has to be done. And yeah, it's incredibly frustrating that we're having to deal with another moral issue within the sport that shouldn't be an issue at all. But here we are. MotoGP's back at Phillip Island in a week and a half's time. I've been Dre Harrison. He's been Cam Buckley. Good night.